Today's shiur in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Sukkah, Daf Lamed Aleph. We begin from the second line from the top, Lamed Aleph, Omud Aleph. Again, we're going to be eventually going to some very significant pictures later in our Pirush Chai illustrated Gemara. I would suggest if you have those available to you, you get them prepared towards the end of the shiur. They'll be very important. But then, not at the beginning of the shiur, so let's start. Tanu Rabban. We learn the following brisa. Sukkah Gezula, a sukkah that is stolen. What does that mean? We'll see in a second. A mesachek b'rishus harabim, or if somebody puts his sukkah up in the rishus harabim, in other words, he's using the public domain without permission. So Rashi says, "Honami gezel harabim." This is stealing from the rabim. They no longer can use this plaza. They can no longer use this parking area. So in this situation, Rabbi Eliezer posel v'chacham mashirim. Rabbi Eliezer says, in both situations, the sukkah is no good, and the chacham say the sukkah is good. Now, what exactly is going on here? Omer Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman says, the machlokas between Rav Elazar and the Chachamim involves the following. Machlokas bishet tokef es chaveiro, that you're literally ticking your friend, v'otzio misukaso, and you're throwing him out of the sukkah that he built, and you're using that sukkah. That's what it means by a sukkah gezula. You're not letting your friend, or the person, I don't know if you'd call your friend, you're not letting this person who built this sukkah use his own sukkah. You're throwing him out of his sukkah, and you're using it. And in that situation, it's possible according to Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer l'taimei. Why did Rabbi Eliezer say it's possible that you're not yotzei in that situation? Because Rabbi Eliezer holds, we had the sheet a few days ago, you can't fulfill your obligation in a borrowed or in a sukkah that is owned by somebody else. In other words, a stolen sukkah, you can't fulfill your obligation. Now, this is true whether you hold karka is an exelus or karka is not an exelus, whether land can be stolen or not. If you hold e karka an exelus, if you say, in fact, somebody can steal karka, so then you stole the karka from this person by stealing, kicking him out of his sukkah and stealing his sukkah on his land, so then sukkah gazuli, then it's a stolen sukkah, and a stolen sukkah is no good. Either on the first day, according to everybody, because of shalochem, must be yours, or on the other days, because of mitzvah bo b'yaveirah. Now, vinami karka eino nixelis, and even if you hold the karka, can't be stolen, so then, okay, so your friend still owns the karka, but the sukkah is shuli. You don't own the sukkah is, quote, being borrowed. And therefore, whether you hold karka and is exelus, or karka is not an exelus, according to Rabbi, it is no good. And according to Rabbanon, it's good no matter what. Rabbanon l'tam ayu, because they hold the amre, they don't hold like this shita of Rabbi Eliezer that you must sit in your own sukkah all 7 days, that you can't sit ever in somebody else's sukkah. So they don't hold like that. They hold that a person is yotzei his chova by sitting in somebody else's sukkah. If a friend invites you over for lunch, so Rabbi Eliezer says you can't be yotzei in that situation, Chachamim say you can. We, of course, pass like the Chachamim. And they also hold the karka einu nigzelus. The land can't be stolen, so therefore it's not a sukkah gezula. The sukkah she'ulahi. It turns out the sukkah is a borrowed sukkah. And therefore, in this situation, Rabbi Eliezer says it's still considered no good, but the Chachamim would say a borrowed sukkah is good, and therefore Chachamim mach shirin. Now, this doesn't, again, I want to stress this, it doesn't say that this person's a tzaddik, it doesn't say he's a good person for doing what he did. He did a horrible thing. We're just looking at it purely from the point of view, are you, in fact, able to go and be yotzei the mitzvah sukkah? The poskim have a whole separate discussion, can you make a bracha in such a sukkah? We'll leave that for another time. But certainly, the Chachamim don't encourage anybody to do this, but bottom line, b'dieved, you would be yotzei the mitzvah of sukkah in such a situation. As opposed to the following case, if you're dealing with Abu Ghazal Eitzim Mesichech Bahem, if you went and stole the wood, so then in that situation, Divri Akol Eino Elo Deme Eitzim, in that situation, everybody would say Biyotzi, even Rabbi Eliezer would say Biyotzi in that situation, albeit everybody would agree that you have to pay for the price of the wood that you stole. So let's say you sold $20 worth of wood, so your sukkah would be kosher, even according to Rabbi Eliezer, because now this is your sukkah. You have been konet this wood for the act of stealing it. However, in this situation, the price of the wood, you'd have to go and pay back. Everybody agrees to that. So therefore, this is different than when you threw the guy out of his sukkah that he built. Now, how come the first case, when you threw the guy out of his sukkah and he built it, Rabbi Eliezer is a posel in that situation? Mimai, what's the reasoning? Midikatani, dumia derishos harabim, because he compared it in this price of this tanu rabbanon, and it said it was like the rishos harabim, if you stole from the rishos harabim or if you stole the sukkah. So they're both similar. Ma rishos harabim karka ladi dehu, just like in the rishos harabim. It's not your land, and therefore it's not your sukkah. So to over here, when you pushed the guy out of the sukkah and you used his sukkah nami lav karka di dehu, it's not your land. You just threw this guy out of his sukkah that he did all the work. And therefore, in this situation, Rabbi Eliezer says that you're not yotzei, and the Chum say, for the reasons that we mentioned, that you are yotzei. But again, if you stole the wood and you built it into a sukkah, so then even Rabbi Eliezer would be moda that you'd be in fact yotzei, because that is now your sukkah. Similarly, we have the following case. This case is a strange case and will require some explanation. Hi, Safta. There was an older woman, right? A bubby. And she went to Rav Nachman's base. Then she went in front of Rav Nachman and she said to him, Amrulay, listen, the Reish Kalusa's servants, Reish Kalusa, Vahul the Rabbanon, the Vay Reish Kalusa, Besukha Gazulah Vyasve, that the Reish Kalusa and all the people, all the rabbis that are being hosted by the Reish Kalusa are sitting in a stolen sukkah. In other words, she said that the servants of the Reish Kalusa stole her wood and they made a sukkah from it. And now they're all sitting in a stolen sukkah. As Rashi says, the gozlu mimeno ad the Reish Kalusa ate it. They stole, the servants of the Reish Kalusa stole her wood, v'sachubet, and they made the sach with the sukkah with it. And she yelled and yelled and yelled to Rav Nachman, help me out. Tzovcha, she yelled at him, v'lo eshkach by Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman didn't respond to her. Now, we'll see in a moment why Rav Nachman didn't respond to her. He actually didn't respond to her for her own good. And I'll explain this in a moment. But let's first read the Gemara. So Rav Nachman didn't respond to her. And Amalei, she was very upset that he didn't respond to her. He said, Itasa, a woman like me, the Habalei Lavua, Telos Mea Vesamne Srei Abde, that in my Elta 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 Zedi, meaning Avram Avinu, who had 318 servants, it says, Vayorak Ishani Chav, Yilidei Beso Shmon Asar, Ushlosh Meos, he took 318 servants, and he went out to fight against the Arba Melochim. So my great-great-great-great-grandfather, he had 318 servants. I'm like him, I'm a very important person. Someone unfortunately said that her father was very, very rich. She had a lot of servants, she had a lot of money. She said, you need to treat me properly. And therefore, Tzovcho Kamayu, I'm yelling in front of you. Hello, Ashkichuba, and Ashkichisuba, and you're not listening to me. How come? So Amar Luhu Rav Nachman, again, doesn't really respond to her, but now he tells the students over here, he says, listen, unfortunately, this lady has no claim. This woman is just a shrier. She's just screaming. She's just yelling over here. As Rashi says, this woman is just has a loud voice over here. All that she has over here is the value of the Eitzim. She's not entitled to get the sukkah itself back. And this is what some of the Mefarshim explained. Rav Nachman was trying to do her a favor. If she comes to him with a complaint during the middle of sukkahs, so then all she's entitled to is the wood. But she says, I'm really a rich lady. I don't want to go out to the shuk and marketplace. That's pasnish. It's not appropriate for me. This is how the Ksav Sofer and others learn this. And therefore, if you come to me during sukkahs, then the psak din is that you're only entitled to the meyetzim, and therefore you're going to have to go out and buy new wood in the store, in the market. And she didn't want to do this, so therefore he didn't answer. He says, it's as if I don't hear the complaint. This way, if you come to me after sukkahs, I can paskin that you're entitled to get back the wood, because after sukkahs is no longer in the midst, so it's not a big deal for them to take it down. And therefore, if you'd only be silent, and you'll get your wood back that you want back right after sukkahs. But she continued to protest, and therefore he said, I have no choice. In this situation, you're only entitled to the value of the wood, you're not entitled to the wood itself. And this we'll see in the upcoming Gemaris because of the famous Takonis Morish or the Takonis Hashavim to encourage people to do tshuva. If you build, I always use this example, if you use the bottom brick at the bottom of the Empire State Building and somebody stole that brick and built the Empire State Building on top of it and the brick was worth $5. Now to take out that brick, the whole building is going to come toppling down. So then in that situation, nobody's ever going to do tshuva. Nobody's ever going to return that brick. It's going to cost them billions of dollars. But if you just make them pay the $5 for the brick, a person who is sad that he stole and he wants to do tshuva will be happy to give the $5 back and say, I'm sorry that I stole from you and here's my tshuva. I'm paying you back. So it's over here. If you steal the wood and you build it into something, so during sukkahs it has a chashivas. It's like the Empire State Building. And therefore you're not obligated to go and give that wood back. So therefore you're only entitled to the value of the wood. But if you'd be silent, Rav Nachman told her, then after sukkahs I can give you back the wood and you don't even have to go to the marketplace. She was tiny, I want to be paid back for going to the marketplace as well. And she wasn't entitled to that. And therefore Rav Nachman tried to do her a favor, but in fact she didn't want that and she ended up losing as a result. That's the simplest way that I would understand this. I wrote more about this in my Sefer Women in the Talmud, Ayin Shum, for those that want to see more about this. And if you want to see more details, than many of them are fortunate to discuss other additional ways to understand this. You can look in the Masifta for a quick summary of many of these Shittos, or look in the various Achronim that deal with this. Going right in the Gemara, Amar Ravina. Ravina tells us, Haikishura the Metaltula, if you stole a beam of the Srach, the Gzula, it was stolen, and you built it in your sukkah. So of the Lei Rabbonim Takanta, the rabbis made over here the same takana that I was talking about with the wood, Mishum Takanas Morish. They said that you don't have to go and physically take this beam out of the sukkah during sukkahs, but you in fact just have to pay for the value of the beam. When it says pshita, why would we think this is any different than the wood? Maishna me'etzin. We just said this din in regards to the wood. So if we said it in regards to the wood, why would we think that it should be any different in regards to this beam? So when it says, no, I might have thought there's a difference. Well, the tema, I might have said, etzim shrichet. Wood is readily available. It's plentiful. You go to the store and just buy wood. That's plain wood. So therefore, to just take schach, for example, so therefore, you might have thought that you can just give the value in that situation because it's so plentiful, it's so easy to get more. But these beams of Al-Hai, this beam, that's already a specialized piece of wood. Lo shricha, it's not so readily available. Maybe in that situation, aim alo. The rabbis didn't dictate that we should have this takonis morish, this takonis shavit. Morish is a beam. So maybe in this situation, they said, no, taka, the beams are hard to get, so you have to give the beam back even during the middle of sukkahs, kumash v'lon. So the chiddush ravina was that this applies even with something that's hard to get, like the beam, as opposed to, you might have thought it's only applicable to something like wood, which is so easy to get. But this is only during sukkahs. Hani mili bego shiva. During sukkahs, when we consider the sukkah, dover choshev, so it's like the Empire State Building, as I gave you the example. Avla basa shiva, after sukkahs is over, so then hodu beine, so then you're going to take the sukkah down anyway, so now you're mechuyav taka to give back the actual beam. Vi chibro batina, however, if you cemented it in, and it's not just staying there for sukkahs, this is now, you made a pergola, you made a more permanent structure over here, so then your takonis morish applies even after sukkahs as well. If you know the achar shiva, nami yovle demei, then you just have to give back the value and want to encourage people to do tshuva. And if you make them take down the whole structure, they won't do tshuva. So therefore, if it's a more permanent structure, like it was cemented in, so then you don't have to give back the actual mamish item that's extant, like you normally have to do. If you steal something and you have it in your possession, you have to always give it back, with these exceptions for the takonis morish, this takonis hashavim. Mark continues and says, Tano, we learned in the following braisa, Yavesh Pasul. If you have a lulav that is dried out, so then it is no good. It's considered not hadar. Rav Yehuda Machshir. Rav Yehuda, however, says that it is considered still acceptable, maybe on a bidyavid basis, but it's still considered acceptable to use this for the lulav. Now, what are they arguing about? Amar Rava, Rava says, Machlokas belulav. The Machlokas over here between the Tanakam and the Chacham and Rav Yehuda is only regards to the lulav, because they're disputing over here, is there not a chiyav of hadar. The Rabbanan Sable Machshina Lulav Yesrok. The pasuk tells us that you have to go and take Lokachtim Lochem Bayom Rishon pre Eitz Hadar. You have to take the pre Eitz Hadar, which goes on the Yesrok. And then he says Kapos Tamarim, Manav Eitz Avos, Rabbi Nochal. So the question is, does it also apply to the other species of the Dalad Minim or just the Esrog alone? So that's the Machlokas. The Rabbanan Sable Machshina Lulav Yesrok. The Chacham say applies to all of the Minim and therefore the Lulav as well. If it's Yavish, it's possible. As opposed to Rav Yehuda, who doesn't. So the Chacham say, Ma Esrog by Hadar, Af Lulav by Hadar, just like the Esrog requires to be Hadar, to be beautiful, so too do the other Dalad Minim require to be beautiful. As opposed to Rav Yehuda, Sabar Lo Makshin Lulav Yesrog, we don't make this Hekish over here, we don't say that just like the Hadar, it applies to the Esrog, it also applies to the other three Minim, but it only applies to the Esrog. Avol B'Esrog, Divrei HaKol, Hadar Minim. But therefore, even Rav Yehuda says that the Esrog has to be Hadar. So this is the Machlokis in the Braisa. A lulav yavish is possible according to the Chachamim. Reviewed his mashma because he doesn't require hadar for the lulav. More questions. Is really? Well, lulav lobai reviewed the hadar. Does Reviewed really say that an esrog is only hadar and a lulav doesn't have to be hadar? But not. But our Mishnah. What about our Mishnah? We said Reviewed the Omer yagdenu milamala. We said if the leaves became nifrad, if the leaves became separated, you must go and rebind it. Now, isn't that because it needs beauty? My time allowed me shum the boy hadar. So therefore, doesn't Reviewed also say they need hadar? Shema says no. That's not why he said you have to bind it. Lo kidiktani taima, because we already learned in the Braisa Reviewed the Omer. Mishum Rabbi Tarfon, really said the name of Rabbi Tarfon, that the reason you have to bind it, the leaves became separated, is because the pasuk tells us that you have to take kapos tamarim. What does that mean? It means kapos. It means bound up. If it's separated, ich v'senu. You have to go and bind it together. It has nothing to do with hadar. That's the definition of a lulav, that it's bound together. So it's nothing to do with hadar, and therefore you can't bring me a right from here that Yehuda requires hadar. In fact, he only says hadar by the esrog. He doesn't hold it by the other three meaning. We're still questioning this opinion of Rava. It says, really? Below by hadar? Are you telling me that Yehuda really doesn't require hadar? How are you going to explain the following Mishnah? We're going to learn this from Yitzhak Shem on Daf Lamed Vav. It says over there, Ein ogdin es a lulav ela bimino, that when you bind the lulav, we agree that you have to bind the lulav. Some say it's a mitzvah to do the igud. And when you bind it, you're binding the lulav together with the hadassim and the aravos, and you have to bind it only bimino, only with the lulav type of bundles of the palm fronds themselves. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda requires that you do it with mino. Now, why? Isn't it because that makes it more beautiful? My timer. La mishum the body harder. Isn't because he wants it to be beautiful. And it will not be beautiful unless you go bind it with something that's from the same species. And therefore, it will be a lack of harder if you bound it with something else. And therefore, you see that Rabbi Yehuda does require harder. Where again says low, because the harm of rubber, because rubber would explain that you don't require something beautiful. You can even use siv. Siv is like the bottom of the tree that the lulav grows from, and it's not very pretty. And therefore, afilu b'siv, you can bind it even with the siv, which is growing at the bottom of the tree, afilu b'ikara the dikla, or even with the bottom of the palm tree. Rashi says, "Ben a klipa, like from the peel. The apple pish in marim domil amara lulav. It doesn't look at all like the lulav, and it doesn't look beautiful. Ubavachem yoso amin, and it just has to be from that same species, because the reason is nothing to do with hader. The time of the review, the halsum lach mishum hader. Who Rashi says, then what is the reasoning? Because Ella, my time of the review, the halsum. What is the reason the review that says it's nothing to do with hader? Because sabra lulav tzarech eged, because he holds it's a mitzvah. You must do eged, as we said, and if you were to do the eged with a different species, then you'd be over Baltosef. The Maisim, Mino, Achrino, Havali Chamisha Minim, and then you'd be over Baltosef, because you're only supposed to have four Minim. It's Dalid Minim. And if you bound it with a piece of gold, right, that sounds like it would be beautiful, but since that's a separate species, you'd be over Baltosef. So that's the reason for Rabbi Yehuda, has nothing to do with Hadar, and Rava's reasoning that Rabbi Yehuda explains the Brisa, Rava explains the Machloks and the Brisa between Rabbi Yehuda and Chacham. And Chacham say that Hadar applies even to the lulav, and Rabbi Yehuda says it doesn't apply to the lulav, it's only to the esrog, so therefore none of these are a raya against this understanding that Rabbi had. So now the Gemara questions, really? Ube esrog me by Rabbi Yehuda Hadar? Wait a second. So now let's go the other way. You're telling me that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't require Hadar for the lulav or the hadassim of the aravos, but he only requires it for the esrog. Is that really true? Does Rabbi Yehuda really require Hadar for the esrog? I'll show you that that's not true, because we learn the following price of Atanya, Arbas Minim Sheba Lulav, the four species that we bind together, we call the mitzvah of Lulav, Hashem Shem Pachas in the hand, just like you're not allowed to have only three of them, Kachim Mosivim Lim, you're not allowed to have five of them, the mitzvah is with four. And therefore, Lo Motz Esrog, the price says, if you weren't able to get an Esrog, don't bring something else. Lo Yavi, Lo Parish, a Parish is usually translated as a quince. Rashi brings down, it's something called Kurunya, and this Kurunya is brought down in the Arach, is something called a Chavush, which is loosely translated as a quince, a certain type of fruit. So, you're not allowed to bring a quince instead of the Esrog, lo parish, lo rima, you can't bring a pomegranate, lo dorachet, or an apple, or any other fruit. You're not allowed to do that. You might have thought that you should do so, because it will be a reminder that there should be a fourth fruit over here. You weren't able to get an esrog, so at least bring something else. But the Gemara will explain later on, that could lead to a takala, because people remember, oh yeah, we used to use an apple when I was growing up. That's because you lived in Siberia, and there were no esrog around. But if you took an apple, some people will mistakenly think years later that you're allowed to use an apple. So therefore, we don't do this. So if we can't bring the right four species, then don't substitute one of them. Now, that's not what we're interested in right now. Here's what we're interested in. Kemushin. Kemushin means something that is close to Yevashim, but it's not Yevashim. Rashi says it's a foreign language word, which in the Lazi Rashi tells us it means nikmatim, which the Mosaf Ha'aruch says, novlim, it fell off from the tree. In other words, it's dried out, but not as dried out as Yevashim. So it's what we would call withered. So kemushin are kesherin. However, Yevashim, if it's really fully dried out, then it's psul, then it is no good. Now, along comes who? Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda comes along and says, this is esrog, even if it's dried out, af yevashim. And some had the word over here, ksherin. Some have the gears over here, af yevashim or ksherin. Not only the kemushin good, but even the yevashim are good, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Clearly, therefore, if it's dried out, it's not something that you would say requires hadar. And in fact, which we show you that this is true, from Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda says, ma'isa, we turn to Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, Ma'isa b'mnei krochin, there were certain krochin, there were certain villages. She'ein darin, Rashi says, amokum pardesim. These villages didn't have orchards. Again, let's give my example of Siberia. There are no pardesim, there are no orchards of esrogim in Siberia. You were sent to Siberia during the war. Vein dekolim mitzuyim sham, there are no palm trees there as well. So what did they used to do? She'im orishin es lulaveim l'bnei v'neim. They would go, and they had a lulav, and they would inherit it, they would give it down to their children, and then to their grandchildren. So therefore, you see that a non-hadar, what we would call a non-hadar lulav, is certainly good. And therefore, how can you tell me that he holds that you need, in fact, to have hadar by an esrog? You see that they would go and use non-hadar things, not only for the lulav, but even for the esrogan. So it seems a pretty good raya according to Rabbi Yehuda. Sanakir, so we have his Amru Lahem, that the Chachamim said back to them, but it's really Rabbi Yehuda. So really, in the Mesoras HaShas, he says Amru Lo. The Chachamim responded to Rabbi Yehuda. You think this is a raya? Mishum raya, bring us a raya from Shas HaTchak, from people in Siberia? Ain't Shas HaTchak raya. You can't bring me a raya from there. They had no alternative. So in that situation, the definition of Hadar changes. Hadar applies when you have a beautiful, nice, loving Mesrogim, and you go take a really lousy one, so then you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah of Hadar. But when there is nothing else around, and this is all you have, so then the definition of Hadar changes. That's the simplest way to understand this, and therefore you can't bring a raya from Shas HaTchak. Maybe, in fact, this was the Hadar of that place, and therefore Rav Yehuda might indeed hold from Hadar. You can't bring us any raya from there. Now, bottom line is, Ketani Mias, we see from over here, Rav Yehuda Omer, Apivashim Ksherim. In any event, whether this is a good raya or not, he certainly claimed that Yaveshim are Ksherim. Now, isn't this talking about the Esrog, that he would hold it an Esrog that is, Yavesh is good, my lava Esrog, and therefore this would be a perfectly good argument against Rava saying that he holds Hadar by Esrog, but he doesn't hold Hadar by Lulav? So he says, no, lo alulav. This is talking about the Lulav. But in fact, even Rabbi Yehuda does hold Hadar by Esrog. So again, we haven't slugged up Rava. Try again. Amamar, kishem shem polchasin mehem kachin musifin aleihem. We just brought down the braisa where it said, just like you can't have three, you can't have five. You're not allowed to have more or less than the dalet minim. Gemara says, pshita, that's the rule with every mitzvah. So why would you have to tell me that over here, that you're not allowed to have three, you're not allowed to have five? Gemara says, no, ma'u detema, this I mentioned before. Hol v'yamar v'yehuda lulav tzorech eged. Since the lulav has to be bound into the eged, you have to go and bind it with the hadasim and the arabos, v'maisa min achrina, and if you were to go bring another species other than the lulav, hay l'chudei koi, v'hay l'chudei koi, you might have said, well, you bring a silver bracelet, you bring a gold bracelet, and you bring something else, and you're wrapping it around, and you say, well, that's separate, and this is separate, and therefore, it's not really both baltosif, so kamash v'la, no, if it's in fact added like this, it's bound, binding the other three together, it looks like it's over baltosif, and that's the chiddush over here that you have to tell us. Amamar, we again requote what we just said. Lo motza esrog, if you don't find an esrog, so then don't try to bring a quince or a pomegranate or a dover acher. Lo yavi, lo rimon, lo parish. I don't know why the order switched around. Before we had lo parish, lo rimon, but lo dover acher, so you can't bring something else. Where it says again, pshita, of course you can. Why would you think that you could? The mitzvah is to take an esrog and not to take an apple or to take a pomegranate or a quince. Where it says, ma'al detema, I might have thought, laisiki hechashul tishkach toras esrog, as I mentioned before, this is where I got it from. That the Gemara says, I might have thought, listen, there's no esrogim available, so people are going to think there's only three species. Better take a fourth species, take a different fruit, take a pomegranate, and remind everybody that there is a fourth species they're supposed to have over here. And that's why we should do it, because otherwise they'll forget Torah's esrog. They won't know there's din of esrog. So kamash ulam, don't do that, because you know what's going to happen? Again, as I mentioned, people are going to grow up in an area that doesn't have esrog, and they're going to use an apple, they're going to use a pomegranate. And you know what's going to happen? Later on in life, they can say, oh, when I was a kid, all the rabbis, even the rabbi, used the pomegranate, so it must be perfectly good. So simin nafichur b'minei da'osil ha'misrach, because people are going to use it using a non-esrog, and they're not going to realize that it was only a shas hatchak, a special gzeirah shelo tishkach toras esrog, and they're not going to know that. And therefore, the benefit of using a pomegranate so they remember that there is a din of esrog is going to be made worse by the fact that even when they have esrog, they're going to continue to use pomegranates, and therefore, it's much better not to do that. Okay, so that explains the reasons behind these different brisos, why they had to tell us these dinim, they're not so posh. Try again, Toshma. The Braisa says, Esrog Hayashon Posul. Here it says, Beferish, that a old Esrog, in other words, it's dried out, it's certainly not Hadar, is Posul. But this Braisa says, Rabbi Huda Machshir. Now, here it clearly states, you can't tell me it's talking about the Lulav, you can't tell me this is talking about anything else. It clearly states, they review the holds, that an Esrog that is not Hadar is good. Teyufta, the Rava, this certainly is a Teyufta on Rava, who said that Rabbi Yehuda holds that Hadar applies only to the Esrog. It doesn't apply to the other Minim, but it does apply to Esrog, to Yufta. This, in fact, slugs up Rava's Shita. New Gemara says, if you're telling me that we slugged it up, this Brisa says, now Rava's an Amori, you can't go against the Brisa. The Brisa says, Rabbi Yehuda holds that you don't require Hadar, he's Machshir, even in Esrog Yashan. So what does it do with the Pasuk Hadar? Below by Hadar, you're telling me it doesn't need Hadar? Why not now? We learned in the Mishnah that we'll learn on Daf Lamed Daled, it tells us, Hayarok Kechresi, if you have over here a green Esrog, it's green like a Kresi, which is like a leek. So Rav Meir Machshir, Rav Yehuda Posel. Rav Meir says it's no good, but Rav Yehuda says it's Posel. Now why did he say it's Posel? not bishulim de bayhada isn't because green isn't beautiful, and therefore clearly Rabbi Yehuda does hold that it's beautiful. So the Gemara says lo mishum de lo gemar peira. The reason why it's not an etzrog is not because it's not beautiful, it's because it's not finished, and it has to be a completed fruit in order to be used as an etzrog. So we still haven't schlugged up this tiyufta of Rava that we just said, that Rava, who said that Rehuda holds Hadar, the Brisa says he doesn't hold Hadar, so that still is good, because we don't have to say over here that this green etzrog is no good according to Rehuda. It's posel, not because of Hadar, but because of Logomar Pera. Try again, Tashma. Now this is a Mishnah that we're going to find also in Lamed Daled. It tells us, shear esrog katan, the shear for a small esrog, the smallest size of an esrog to be kosher, Rebbeir Omer ke'egos. Rebbeir says it can even be as small as the size of a walnut. If it's smaller than that, it's not kosher. But at least the size of a walnut is good. And along comes Rehuda, Omer ke'beitza. Rehuda says it must be a geshmaka type of an esrog, at least the size of an egg. Now, why does Rehuda require it to be bigger than Rebbeir? Lab mishum de boyhada isn't because it needs it to be beautiful. A small, really small walnut-sized esrog is not beautiful. So clearly, doesn't Rabbi Yehuda hold Hadar Kasha on the Brisa that we explained was a Tiyufta to Rava? Clearly, this Brisa seems to support what Rava said, that he holds Hadar. Shmuel says, no, that's not correct. Mishum de logomai peira. Again, if it's so small, he holds it's not completed fruit. If it's not a completed esrog, then it's nothing to do with Hadar. It's just not an esrog yet. It has to be a fully mature esrog to be used for the mitzvah of esrog. Try again. Tashma. We learned another Mishnah on Daf Lamed Daled. It tells us, "Ubegadol kedei sheyachos shnayim biyado achas." The maximum size of an esrog is that you can hold it, two of them in one hand. That is the opinion of Divrei Yehuda. It can't be humongous. You have to be able to hold two esrogim in one hand. If it's bigger than you need one hand to hold one esrog, it's no good. Rav Yossi disagrees. Rav Yossi Omer, no, afilu echab shteyado, you have a watermelon-sized esrog, you need two hands to hold it, it's also good. Now how come Rav Yehuda says that's no good? My time in Rav Yehuda says if it's so big that you can't hold two of them in one hand, then it's not a kosher esrog. Isn't it lav mishum deboy hadar? Isn't it because he holds it you require hadar? Kash on the brice and it shlugged up Rav. So Omer says, no, also again, lo, kivin deomar abba, lulav biyomin v'esrog v'small. The right way to take the lulav is to hold the lulav nadasim the rovus in the right hand. Rashi explains, because that's three mitzvos. And the single mitzvah esrog is in your left hand. Now what happens if you picked it up in the wrong way? You picked up the esrog in your right hand, and now you have the three minim in your left hand, then you want to switch it. So zimnim, the mechal filet, you have the esrog in the wrong hand, you have the other three species, the lulav, the hadas, and the rovus in the wrong hand. They're in the left hand, the esrog's in the right hand, and you want to switch it. And you're going to switch it. Now, if you put it down, you may drop it. So you just try to switch it by moving the esrog into the hand that's already holding the other three species. This is how Rashi understands this. So you go take the esrog from your right hand, and you move it into your left hand that's holding the lulav, hadasim, and arabos. Therefore, that one left hand has to be able to hold both an esrog and the lulav, hadasim, and the arabos. But if it's so big, you're going to drop something, and that's why Rabbi Yehuda says it can't be so big. Nothing to do with Hadar, but it has to do with the fact that you're going to have to sometimes switch it around. And if you can't hold all four species in one hand, which of course would be impossible if you had to take two hands to hold just the esrog, so therefore it would be no good. And therefore, that's why Rabbi Yehuda says you should use smaller esrogim, that you can at least hold two of them in one hand. So therefore, if you ever have to hold the lulav, hadas, and the arabos and the esrog together, your hand can hold it. Because the esrog takes up half the hand, and the lulav, hadas, and the arabos take up the other half of the hand, and therefore you can hold all of them in one hand, and then switch the lulav, hadas, and the arabos to the right hand. But it has nothing to do with hadar. Where it says, so one basic question still remains. The pasuk says that the esrog has to be hadar. So how are you going to understand that? How can you possibly say that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't require hadar even by the esrog? Gemara says, no, you're misunderstanding what the word hadar means. Hadar doesn't mean beautiful. Hahu, you need the word hadar. Hadar bi'ilano mishana l'shana. It tells us that it stays on the tree. It doesn't go and last just for one season and then falls off the tree. An esrog stays on the trees for multiple years. And that's what it means, hadar. It means hadar bi'ilano. It stays on the tree, returns from year to year, the same esrog. And Rashi explains this is the only fruit that has that characteristic. And if it's the only fruit that has that characteristic, so then From here we see the esrog amakra, that the pasuk is talking about an esrog she'ein priyacher osakin. There is no other pri that is hador be'ilano mishana l'shana, that stays on the tree for more than 1 year. So that's what the word hador means. Nothing to do with beauty. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda Shita, in fact, is that not only do the three minim not require hador, the esrog doesn't require hador, because hador doesn't mean beauty. It means hador be'ilano mishana l'shana. Very good. Now we continue the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, "Shalasheira v'shalirani dachas." If you have a lulav that came from an asheira tree or from an irani dachas, it is no good. So the Gemara asks, "Shalasheira posul?" The asheira is posul. How come? For all my Rava said that a lulav shalavodazara lo yitol, but v'imnot al kosher. How can you tell me that an asheira is posul even b'diavad? Rava taught us that you shouldn't use an avodazara lulav, because it's improper, it's pasnish. However, if bottom line, that's all you had, or after the fact you used it, imnotal kosher. So here you clearly see that an asheira, while it shouldn't be used l'chatrila, it's pasnish to use such an avodah zara item for your lulav and esrog, but it's good after the fact. So how can we say in our Mishnah that an asheira tree is no good? Rava clearly said that it's good. So the Gemara says, no, you're dealing with two different types of Asherah. In our Mishnah, we're dealing with Asherah, the Moshe Askina. We're dealing with the Asherah that Moshe Rabbeinu talking about. What is that? As Rashi explains, we're dealing over here with Osom Shayu B'Shas Kibush Eretz Yisrael. There were trees that they actually were worshipping the trees as Avodah Zarah in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, Hitzrichan HaPasuk HaKosov Sreifa. The Torah says you have to burn down those trees. Bashrehen Tisrufun Baish, this week's Parsha. So therefore, you have to go and burn down the trees. Now, lulav tzarech shir, as I mentioned when we did this in the Mishnah, the lulav requires a minimal shir. We learned it was four tvachim, one to hold on to and three to do the nanuim with. Bahai, when you have to burn it, there's a mitzvah to burn it, keman demirsa shiure. It's as if it doesn't have an adequate shir, keeping the l'sreifa quiet, because the whole thing is going to be burned. Then we say, ha'omed ligzos kegazuz domi. If something is omed l'sreifa, so it's kesorv domi, and therefore it doesn't have a shir. That's why it's no good. So that's what our Mishnah is talking about. Rabba, where he said his din, that Alulu Shal Avodah Zarah is lo yitol l'chatrila, but if you took it b'diabed, v'mnot ha-kosher, that's talking about, as Rashi explains, when you use it for a broom. V'afal gav v'yisuri hanohu, it's a yisur hanoh to use a broom that was used to worship in a base Avodah Zarah, and they used this broom to clean up in the house. They weren't worshiping the broom, but the broom was used to help out the Avodah Zarah. So it's pasnish to use such a broom. It's also b'hanoh. Nevertheless, since mitzvos aren't Lahenos mehen, so then if you do use it after the fact to be yotzei the mitzvah of lulav and esrog, you will in fact be yotzei. So therefore, in this situation, you are yotzei. That's why Rabba's statement is not a contradiction to our Mishnah. We're talking about two different scenarios. The Asherah in our Mishnah is actual worshipping this tree. That has to be burnt because it doesn't have the shear, and therefore it's no good. As opposed to the broom, it's just also bahanah. So in the situation where it's also bahanah, so it does have the shear, just can't get an off from it. But mitzvos lav lahanos nitnu, mitzvos aren't to get an off from it, and therefore b'diavad, if you use it, you would be yotzei. And I'll show you that this is right. The Gemara says, daikonami diktoni, because they're compared together in the Mishnah. It said, dum yadir anidachas. It said, similar to an iranidachas. An iranidachas, all the property has to be burned. So therefore, the reason why an iranidachas lulav is no good is because it's michtas shiure. It has to be burned, and it doesn't have a significant shear, therefore. So to the asher is talking about where it must be burned. It doesn't have a significant shear, as opposed to the Asherah of Rava was talking about they use it as a broom to sweep in front of the Avodah Zarah, and that wasn't actual Avodah Zarah, so just also Banoah, but it's not Michtas Shi'ure. Now, this is a good break point, even though we didn't go all the way to the bottom of the Omer Aleph, but this is a good break point, so we'll stop over here. With this, we conclude today's Shi'ur.